trying to negotiate a road in Beirut. As many roads in Beirut, you take your life into your hands every time you attempt to cross. It's the 10 to 9 call to prayer. And I've only been in the city a few days, but I feel I've got a bit of a grasp on it. Especially today, having exited, left the city and tried to find the end of the building site that appears to be born here, but it never ended. All the way up into the mountains, there was construction and development as far as the eye could see. And sometimes you really did not want it to be there, because these were obviously areas of potentially outstanding beauty, views and vistas across valleys, mountains and coastline. Someone had just decided to stick a massive concrete monstrosity, and then they'd kind of ran out of money to finish it. Or they're just taking their time forever. I'm walking along with my mate Phil, who has been here a lot longer than I have, and is due to leave at the end of this month. What's your take on Beirut?
Don't even get me started.
as a local.
Yeah, hardly. I mean, it's a place that's just riddled with pollution and sectarianism. I find it's the least charming city I've ever been in, without question. It's like a study in, all of Lebanon seems to be a study in the beauty of geology ruined by mankind, and the buildings start falling down before they've even been finished. It's like, yeah, the perpetual building site. I don't seem to have too much nice to say about it, unfortunately, but there we are.
Which is out of character for Phil, who used to lament at how beautiful areas of Damascus were, which obviously that's probably in the past now as well.
Yeah, I suppose it is, but Damascus always seemed to have, like, there was some element of its charm left, It seems so distant in Beirut's past now. It's the whole Paris of the Middle East thing, and you just wonder when, Maybe it was nice in the 1950s. It just seems to have left so much of that behind, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where it's gone. It's like, I don't know where the soul of Beirut has gone. I've not been able to find it. I haven't looked particularly hard, I've got to be honest, but I've not seen it.
It's interesting when you talk about charm, because it's one thing I was kind of desperate to find, and even in the areas of development that the late, was it president?
Right, yeah.
The late president set up a company and did put in an awful lot of... Prime Minister. Awful lot of investment to make something good, but in some ways, a lot of people are saying destroyed kind of the soul of the city, where all the different religions and types of people would come together, and they would meet in this place. And yeah, it probably looked a bit shabby and thrown together way back then, but it probably had done for thousands of years. And now it looks a little bit like, I don't know, the homogenized luxury shopping area that you find in so many cities around the world. And that certainly doesn't feel like it's charming in any way.
No, it's true. Today we had the fella up in the mountains said, I'm sorry, Lebanese people only love money. And we've had people say that to us more than once. And there does seem to be a really strong element of that. And, something else somebody said to me here was that, the war's never ended. Yeah, they've stopped shooting at each other, but in terms of the politics, the sectarianism and all the rest of it, the corruption, they've never really kind of had the South Africa-style truth and reconciliation of it all. So no one's ever moved beyond the 1970s. Yeah, they've got nicer cars now, and there's more money washing around, and you can buy a luxury yacht if you're lucky enough to have the money. But it's not... They've not laid these things to rest. I don't know, it's really complicated, but that's how it strikes me as a kind of novice here. And it seems sort of sad. It's something depressing about it.
There are people living in extreme poverty alongside people driving, no joke, Porsches, Ferraris.
Maseratis, Aston Martins.
Yeah, there isn't probably a supercar or...
You can see an Aston Martin parked next to an open sewer.
Yes.
It's something strange about it.
It's weird. It's not something I've seen, even in places like Mumbai, where the caste system is evident that there are people... Well, the haves and the have-nots are so far apart. I would draw parallels here, but it is weird. And, you know, walking past a Ferrari dealership last night and thinking, wow, this is so out of place. But it isn't. If you look at the variety of people that are here, it's kind of they demand it, they have the money for it, they've got it. And as you were saying to me, Phil, why would you go out and buy a car that is this expensive and not even consider for a second that maybe some of that money can go to making a road that is able to drive on?
Yeah, or paying your taxes, right? I mean, I think that's the weird... there seems to be some kind of weird psychology here where it's almost like it's the future. It's kind of a grim vision of the future. If you, it's a city in which, you know, it's every man for himself, every family for itself. Like, you get as much as you can, as quickly as you can, and devil take the hindmost. And the devil takes the hindmost, unfortunately, and it doesn't seem to work. It almost makes me believe in government and taxes. You know, it's enough to make you believe, yeah, that, okay, the government spy on you, but they do something useful. There's some kind of coherency there. This is a place that doesn't have government, and it's a testament to what a place looks like when you don't have government. And it is a perpetual building site that's kind of unpleasant and has a nasty edge to it, I think.
Would you go as far as to say that this is a kind of anarchy, then?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, absolutely.
So strange. I'm sat on the plane on the way over, and there was a guy reading a book on anarchy, and he looked like some kind of philosophy student or something. And then to kind of bring this full circle, as I go in a few days, and, you know, I'd love going up into the mountains and seeing quite beautiful mountains, but also being a little bit disturbed by how a place of natural beauty, a shrine for many, you know, the birthplace of Khalil Gibran, the amazing poet and writer who kind of touched so many lives. And yeah, there's his house, and it has been kind of protected, but you only have to step 20 feet and you're surrounded by plastic chairs and...
Well, and the interesting thing about that was, you know, the humbleness of it. It was so simple. It was a couple of sofas. It was some cushions on the floor. It was a very traditional kind of Arabic-style place. And a guy who obviously put a lot of stock in thoughts and poetry and, you know, things supposedly of deeper meaning. It seems as though, you know, as Beirut has gone so far beyond that. Lebanon seems to have left that behind. That really seems like a relic, that kind of intellectual endeavor here. I don't, you know, this might all be desperately unfair because I don't know the place well enough, but it does. It seems, you know, unfortunately, it just seems like a brutally superficial place, you know, astoundingly so. And I accept that, you know, it's not limited to Beirut. That's almost every modern city, but absurdly so here. You know, you can't avoid it.
You know, I've met a couple of people who I've kind of... have made me smile, and I've had interesting conversations with, and we're talking here about the infrastructure, and we're talking about the architecture, and we're talking about everything kind of kickable around us. The people. It's quite interesting how many people I've seen that have modified their bodies in some way. So that superficialness isn't just in the infrastructure. Would you say it could be in the people as well?
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, it's strange, you know, some of the Lebanese people we've met have admitted as much, haven't they? They seem to be their own greatest critics, which I suppose is a testament to them. You know, some of the, if you want a good criticism of Lebanon, speak to Lebanese people. They'll really kick it around, which is, again, it speaks well to them. But, you know, I guess I'm writing more about Syrians here, and so I deal with Syrians more. Syrians find this place absolutely shocking. They can't believe the sectarianism. They can't believe the kind of attitude towards it, the weird fracturedness of it. And these are people who have come from a country now torn apart by 3 years of appalling war, and they come here and find it offensive. They're offended by Lebanon. And of course, Syria's had a huge role in Lebanon's history, but that's, I don't know, there's something interesting about that. There's an interesting psychology here, and, you know, I don't know enough about it, and I hate to say, you know, I'm leaving in... what, 26 days and however many hours, and I won't miss the place at all.
There's a couple of places, though, that I believe you've discovered that are gems, that do contain incredible people doing incredible things. We're going to visit one of these places tomorrow.
Yeah, there's a really good animal welfare agency here. It's called BETA, Beirut for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and it's basically run by five sort of ass-kicking women who live in Beirut and kind of have devoted their lives to helping animals here. And again, they're kind of critics of the place, and obviously, but they also love Beirut as well. They love their lives here and don't want to leave. But yeah, they're pretty special people, and they're doing something quite amazing. And it's that's really taken me. That's kind of the opposite of this. Oh, you know, if you get some money, buy a great big car for yourself and a big watch and, you know, get a boob job and a facelift. They're kind of totally the opposite of that. If they get some money, they'll throw it into, you know, trying to save animals that are being run down and shot and all kinds of things by people who are just bored and don't seem to, you know, care much about animals. So, that's a really compelling thing. And that, again, in the kind of the hopelessness I have seen in Beirut, that's the hope. The hope is up there, you know, that there is hope with these people.
And tomorrow we will be heading out of the city once again and going and checking these people out. And I'm going to meet them for the first time and hopefully gather, collect, document some stories in the hope of sharing the good work they're doing so that other people can see that hope and maybe even help, who knows. Thanks a lot, Phil. We are pretty much at our place. We're standing outside because there is a heavy military presence, and I don't want to be walking in, documenting, and looking like we're
third best army in Lebanon.
Yeah, so we're just next to the third best. This is the Lebanese army, the third best army in Lebanon. I love that phrase.